You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Grammar Girl here. I'm Mignon Fogarty, and you can think of me as your friendly guide to the English language. We talk about writing, rules, history, and cool stuff. And today I have a special treat because I have an interview with Ralph Kies, the author of a fascinating new book that I've been enjoying called The Hidden History of Coined Words. It has wonderful stories about, you know, hundreds, maybe a thousand words and where they came from. And it's just a delight. So, Ralph, thank you for being here with me today.
Delighted to be with you, Mignon.
Yeah. So this, I was so excited when I received the book in the mail and started leafing through it. And I just knew immediately it was something I was going to love because there are sort of, you know, multi-page stories about the origins of words, but also, you know, quick hits all throughout too. The first one you have to tell me about is the origin of scientist, because I used to be a scientist and I was incredibly surprised when I read that entry in your book.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
In 1833, a group in England, the Royal Association for the Advancement of Science, met and wondered what word could they come up with that would cover all of them, you know, physicists, chemists, geologists, etc. And they batted around words like Naturforscher is a German word, but it means nature poker. And they thought, that might subject, people might laugh at that one. So that was out. Then they thought about savant, S-A-V-A-N-S, but that was French. So that wasn't going to work. And they thought of natural philosopher was appropriate, but a bit of a mouthful. So then one of their members, the master of Trinity College, Cambridge, a polymath named William Whewell, suggested scientist. Now, he wasn't serious. He was just kidding. Scientist, get it? Like atheist or journalist or tobacconist or seolist, which meant someone who tried to pretend to know things but didn't. And so everybody got a good laugh out of that scientist, ha, 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 and went on to the next idea. Well, that should have been that, but then Dr. Whewell, or I don't know if he was a doctor or not, William Whewell wrote a book in 1840 where he brought it up again, this time a little more seriously. And he got a lot of blowback. What a terrible word, scientist. One luminary after another dismissed it as still a bit of a joke. But the public kind of liked it, and it caught on. And voila, we still use it today.
That's such a surprise. It seems now like such a serious, important word that it never would have occurred to me that it was originally a joke.
Nor me till I read about that meeting of the Royal Association. But I mean, that's a common path that words take. They start out as jokes and then become serious words. Like, what am I thinking about? Software was originally just a joke of a word, you know, like an antonym of hardware, you know, poke in the ribs, chuckle, software, get it? and now, of course, it's standard brand. They're just one word after another that began as a joke, but ended up as a serious word.
I noticed that too as I was reading through it. I think today we think of people who want to coin words and are serious when they propose a new word. And so many of the words in your book came about either accidentally, unintentionally, or a lot of times as a joke or even as an insult. The one that was that surprised me was the paintings, the Impressionists, which, you know, we think of as a serious, important group of artists. And that name, why don't you tell the story of where that name came from?
Well, isn't that fascinating? In 1874, yes. An exhibit was mounted of artists who were considered sort of beyond the pale in Paris. And this included Degas, Cezanne, Renoir, Monet. And their paintings were not literal, like paintings were supposed to be at the time. They just had daubs and brushstrokes and bright colors, lots of light. And a critic, an art critic named Louis Leroy, just ridiculed in his review. He said, these are not paintings, they're just impressions. The people who painted them are not artists, they're impressionists. And he thought he was blowing them out of the water with this insult of a word, ha ha ha, impressionist. Well, lo and behold, the artists themselves liked it and began to call themselves impressionists. The school of painting that they were part of became known as impressionism. And today it's a very respectable and admired word.
Right. It's almost the opposite of the beatniks. That was also put out as not necessarily quite a serious word, but the people, they didn't adopt it. They hated it, right?
Oh, okay. So Jack Kerouac, one of the leading avant-garde poets of his time, said that he was part of a beat generation, that they were beats. So then a columnist in the San Francisco Chronicle, just in passing, he didn't think of a serious word, just in passing said, well, these are beatniks. Now, at the time, Sputnik, the satellite, the Russian satellite, had just gone up in space, and Nick was kind of a popular suffix, peacenik, etc. But so he called them beatniks. They hated it. the beatnik, the ones we call beatniks now, hated it. One deli in the North Beach of San Francisco, in response, said, "Everyone welcome except Herb Cain." So that was how that one was received, but
because he was the one who coined that phrase, that term, right?
Yeah, exactly. The column, he was a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, and he had coined the term beatnik, and those he called beatniks just didn't like that term at all. They thought it was degrading and insulting, but it was picked up immediately by the public, and we still use it.
But it turned out he didn't love it either, right?
Herb Cain?
Right. No. I thought he didn't like the board either that much.
No, he said, I was just using that in passing. I didn't mean that to be taken seriously. But, you know, it's very common for people who coin words to then regret it. I call it coiner's remorse. like when Alan Greenspan, for example, the Secretary of the Treasury, said we were in a period of irrational exuberance, and that got picked right up. It became the title of a book. Mm-hmm. Well, 10 years later, when Terry Gross had him on Fresh Air, she asked him how he felt about coining that phrase, and Greenspan sighed and said, "I wished I hadn't." and that's not uncommon at all, that people end up. Thomas Kuhn, for example, who coined paradigm shift, paradigm and paradigm shift for ways schools of thinking change over time, got picked up all over the place. There's even a band called Paradigm Shift now. And he was just horrified and said he wished he had used exemplar instead of paradigm. Maybe it wouldn't have been so misused, but who wants to talk about exemplars, and would we have an exemplar shift if Dr. Kuhn had used that term instead of paradigm?
Right. One thing that you mentioned that made a lot of sense is if a word is fun to say or sounds nice, it's much more likely to become a hit. I think was mugwumps was that one of them?
Yeah, mugwump. Now mugwump, I just love that word. Why isn't it still in use? Maybe it'll get revived after this conversation. So mugwump, that began as an Indian word, Algonquian, for a very important figure. And they were called mugquumps. So the settlers picked it up and began to call their own leaders mugquumps. And then in 1884, during the presidential race, a bunch of Republicans, bolted from their party to support the Democratic candidate, Grover Cleveland, and the New York Sun newspaper taunted them as little mugwumps. So mugwumps got picked right up, including by the mugwumps themselves, to mean a political outlier, somebody who's independent, who goes their own way, is a mugwump. And that lasted for decades, I think a lot because it was just so much fun to say. A coined word that's fun to say has a lot better chance of being adopted and becoming a permanent part of the lexicon than one that's boring to say.
Yeah. So you mentioned the popularizing of words. So I think we'll take a quick break for our sponsor here. And then when we come back, we'll talk about some people who were extraordinary popularizers of words. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Remember the frustration of trying to memorize vocabulary and grammar rules, only to find you couldn't actually use the language in real life? Well, there's a better way to learn. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program with millions of users learning 25 different languages, and you can get it on your desktop or as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways with its intuitive process. It's really different. You pick up the language naturally, first with words, then the phrases, and then with sentences. Plus, with Rosetta Stone's true accent feature, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There is no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Grammar Girl listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Is it rosettastone.com/grammar? That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/grammar today.
So we're back. So we've talked about some of the interesting words and in particular in the book, but you also have a section on people who just coined an extraordinary number of words, or at least popularized them. And I think everyone thinks of Shakespeare, but there are many others. So Milton was one of them. Can you talk about how prolific Milton was at creating words, but also making some more popular?
Sure. John Milton, the poet, was prolific in coining words. He coined hundreds and hundreds of them. It's not always clear when a word is original, so we can't put a number, a specific number, but it was well into the hundreds. He's one of the favorite word coiners among etymologists, people who take a serious interest in coined words. Just a few examples: advantage, complacency, damp, dismissive, fragrance, jubilant, obtrusive, terrific. The list goes on and on. He was one of the major contributors of new words to the English language, beloved among etymologists for that reason.
And how do they determine whether he created a word or just maybe heard a word on the street and used it and then made it more popular?
You know, it's almost impossible to tell, because that happens all the time, that someone will hear a word on the street and then plunk it into a piece of writing or use it in their own conversation and then get credit for it. So that, I'm sure that happened with Milton, but it's also scholars have determined in one case after another how he was able to put suffixes on words or prefixes. You know, he would take the word impassive, and for example, and just put a, he would take the word passive, excuse me, and put an IM in front and get impassive. He would take dimension and he would put LESS at the end and get dimensionless. And this is just, he was just incredibly inventive. One time he got a twofer. He coined obtrusive. Okay. Then he doubled up with unobtrusive. So he got
nice.
Two words out of one coinage.
Dickens is another one we think of. I tend to think of him mostly for his character names, his wonderful character names, but he also seems to have invented, you know, hundreds, if not a thousand words in the English language.
Yes. Okay, so the eponyms, Pecksniffian, Scroogish, Micawber-esque, we all know about those. But people who have studied original use of words by Dickens have found hundreds of them. So, for example, he added less to care for careless. He added less to penny for penniless. But then he went on to do kind of silly things like fireworkless or conversationalist less, theater less, not so good. But then the other ones that I mentioned earlier, we still use penniless, careless, etc. Very common words.
Yeah, I guess if you want to play with words and maybe have a chance of coining your own, look at those prefixes and suffixes and start there. It seems
right.
Like the training wheels for creating words.
Yeah, he gave us unchangeable, unapproachable, unholy. And then by adding AL to, for example, arrive, he got arrival. Adding AL to aspiration, he got aspirational.
That's wonderful. Well, before we go, the one was I was going through the book. It's just a tour de force. I mean, the number of words in here, the people. I did this take you 3 decades to write? How did this book come about? I want to hear about your research.
thank you for asking, Mignon. This book about did me, and I submitted my proposal for it. I had written an article in 2013 for the American Scholar on coined words, and then I expanded that into a book idea, submitted a proposal that was accepted in 2015. So here we are, 6 years later, the book's finally out, and I've about had it. I'm about done in. It was a very, very challenging book to write. Just the kind of research it took, confirming things. Etymologists are very scrutinizing of attempts to say what words are original and what aren't. So I tried to dot all my I's and cross all my T's and mind my etymological P's and Q's, which incidentally is a phrase nobody's ever been able to figure out where it came from, P's and Q's.
But I know, it's one of my favorites.
Oh, isn't it a great phrase? but who knows where it came from. But anyway, so it took me quite some time to write, to do the research, to write it, to rewrite it. I'm kind of a fussy writer, and I rewrite 10, 20, 30, 40 drafts typically for my books.
Good heavens. Well, I believe it, because it came together so nicely. And it looks like you've written about 20 books. Is book writing essentially your full-time job, or you have a professorship somewhere too? Tell us a little more about you.
It's basically all I've ever done, that in articles and essays since 19, published my first book in 1973, We the Lonely People. And then followed that with Is There Life After High School, about high school memories, in 1976, which eventually became a Broadway musical that still gets produced here in other countries. My best known book is probably The Courage to Write, about how to deal with writing fears. But it's a total 17 books total, and it's basically all I've ever done. I've done a little teaching, I do some speaking, but book writing is basically my career.
Are you working on something new right now?
No. I'm
I know that feeling.
Yes, exactly.
So. Well, this, you should spend some more time promoting this, because it is a treasure, and I think people are going to love it. It's called The Hidden History of Coined Words by Ralph Keyes. That's K-E-Y-E-S. Thank you so much, Ralph, for being here with me today.
Thank you, Mignon. It's been a pleasure.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.